I got my laptop out and I needed to get out the agony that was in my head. I was clambering around trying to clear up the mess, having lost my only child a few hours previously. And I started to write and I couldn't stop. I wrote for 3 days without stopping for a break. And I wrote my diary of the first 102 days without her, and it finished on what would have been her 16th birthday. I'm very grateful for the book. It's now being used in schools. It's been used with parents and teenagers. It's been used by bereavement counsellors. And, it depicts a parent, a real-time account of the aftermath of losing their child. And it shows you what was going on in my mind. There's now a play of the book, in fact, and the play is called What Martha Did Next. So that's a wonderful byproduct of my sad story. So I write to help myself. I write to keep myself company. I live by myself. I'm a single parent. But by being able to write, I can try to make some sense of it, but I can also write for, you know, I've written for the Huffington Post and Mum's Net. And by being able to do that, I can communicate out to the world, to other families, normal families and so on, and say, please listen to my writing, please listen to what I'm saying, because I'm doing this as a safety-first approach to drug policy that I believe in. And I want to save lives. I don't want the world to lose another Martha.
Anne-Marie, I'm so very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
I am so very grateful to you for turning that grief into something as powerful as what you're doing.
Thank you. It's been lovely to speak to you.
Oh, you're not done yet, because I have to ask, where can people find your book, and do you have a website, that kind of stuff? How can people find out more?
I have a lovely website called whatmarthadidnext.org. And you can also, if you want to talk to me about the Anyone Shall project or get involved, we're collecting stories all the time. If anyone has a story and they want to get involved, we're looking for some funding to transport families from across the world so that we can all get to the UNGAS meeting as well. But I have my website, which tells everyone what I get up to. All my interviews are on there. I've conducted probably about 80 interviews throughout the UK. When I'm finished in the US for this visit, I'm going over to Italy to attend a harm reduction conference with parents and teenagers. I'm very busy. And it's great because it gives me a purpose in the aftermath of what's happened. I'm always getting emails from bereaved parents, newly bereaved parents, sadly, and also parents who are very concerned about their child's drug taking, or they're starting to dabble or be curious and so on, and asking for my advice. So I give basic harm reduction information, which is very important for modern teenagers. You know, I said the just say no thing to my also modern teenager, and within a few weeks she was dead. Now it's about converting that no into what they need to know. I wish I had had the bravery to have a harm reduction conversation with my child. You know, I've gone on the record saying Martha wanted to get high, she did not want to die. No parent wants either, but there's one of those that's preferable to the other. You know, you cannot recover from being dead. Yeah.
And just once again, for the benefit of the listeners, the website.
Well, my website is What Martha Did Next. .org, and from there they can get in touch with me to talk about the Anyone Shall project, or there's a link to my book. The book is also available on Amazon.com. It's an ebook as well, and I've had amazing feedback from around the world with regards to my book. So it's as if I'm being an active mum still. You know, I used to always be referred to as Martha's mum. I don't hear that anymore, so that's why I introduce myself as that, because to me it's the best label you can have. To be a mother is a privilege. To be a parent is like winning the lottery. Yeah.
I cannot thank you enough, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thank you so much for spending the time with me. Thank you.
That was Anne-Marie Coburn. She's the author of 5,742 Days, and she's Martha's mom.
This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
The Pfizer drug company has announced plans to merge with the Irish drug giant Allergan in what's believed to be the largest merger in healthcare industry history. The two companies would also become the world's largest drug maker. Officially, the merger has the smaller Irish company Allergan buying the larger U.S.-based Pfizer company. The corporate headquarters would remain in New York, but the official residency for tax purposes would be in Ireland, which has a much lower overall corporate tax rate. The merger was announced just days after the Obama administration vowed to crack down on international corporate tax inversions, where a U.S. corporation will reincorporate in a foreign country in order to avoid paying U.S. taxes. The United States Treasury Department is not expected to rule on the merger, as the official deal has the smaller Ireland-based Allergan buying the larger U.S.-based Pfizer. The company's main drugs are Viagra and Botox. Less than a month ago, Allergan agreed to plead guilty to medical fraud and pay $125 million for bribing doctors in the U.S. to prescribe the company's drugs.
The city of Brussels in Belgium remains under lockdown for the third day as authorities continue to conduct raids and search for suspects from the Friday the 13th Paris attacks. European leaders have vowed to tighten border controls around the region in response to the Paris attacks. Belgian police conducted 22 raids and arrested 16 people over the last few days searching for the alleged mastermind behind the Paris attacks. The country has urged the public to stay home and has closed schools, the public transportation system, museums, and most shops. Thousands of members of the police and military are actively patrolling the city of Brussels, while authorities warn of the possibility of an imminent attack. European political leaders have agreed to meet before the end of the year to decide upon a French proposal to change the European Constitution to allow for stringent border checkpoints, currently illegal under EU law.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine, from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.immc.org for Monday, November 23rd, 2015. Three Palestinians killed by Israeli army gunfire in three separate attacks in the West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli troops shot and killed three Palestinians in three separate attacks Monday, bringing the death toll since October 1st to 97. Israeli forces shot and killed Alaa Hashash, 16, on Monday afternoon after he allegedly attempted to stab an Israeli soldier at the Hawara checkpoint south of Nablus, Israel's army said. A Palestinian woman identified as Samah Ahmed from Amariya village near Nablus was shot in the head in the crossfire, witnesses said. Palestinian security sources announced that Samah was shot in the head while sitting inside her car near where the incident occurred. Her injuries were reported as critical. No Israelis were reported injured during the incident. Also on Monday, a Palestinian man was shot dead after stabbing and killing an Israeli settler and injuring another on Settlers Road 443 west of Ramallah, Israel's army said. The Palestinian Ministry of Health identified the man as Ahmed Jamal Taha, 16, from the Katana village near Ramallah. Earlier on Monday midday, a 16-year-old Palestinian girl was shot dead in Jerusalem after allegedly carrying out a stabbing attack near the Mahane Yehuda market. Israeli media initially reported that two Israelis were wounded in the alleged attack, although a spokesperson for the Hadassah Hospital later confirmed that one of those injured was a 70-year-old Palestinian resident of Bethlehem who had light stabbing wound to his neck. The other was a 27-year-old Israeli security guard who was shot in the hand by friendly fire. An Israeli security guard who had been driving near the Mahane Yehuda market on Jaffa Street got out of his car when he saw the two girls and quickly shot dead 16-year-old Hadil Awad and severely wounded her cousin, 14-year-old Nuran Awad. On Sunday, three Palestinians, including a 16-year-old girl, were shot and killed by Israelis. All three were accused of having a knife, but in two of the three killings, eyewitnesses contradicted the Israel's military account that the person killed had a knife. In other news, Israeli soldiers kidnapped 14 Palestinians during pre-dawn invasions targeting the southern West Bank city of Hebron and the northern West Bank city of Nablus. Elsewhere, a rocket fired from Gaza Strip reportedly landed in southern Israel on Monday, with no injuries reported according to the Israeli army. A spokesperson said that the rocket was launched at 6:30 a.m. and landed in open areas of Ashkor Regional Council. No political group in Gaza has claimed responsibility. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, November 23rd, 2015 News Roundup from the Occupied Palestinian Territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Banoura.
The co-founder of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign in Nigeria has called on world leaders to do more to find the schoolgirls who were kidnapped in April of 2014. 276 girls were taken by Boko Haram fighters who invaded their school a year and a half ago. 18 months later, less than 50 of the girls have managed to return home. The other 219 girls remain missing. The militant Boko Haram claimed that the girls had been given to men and forced into marriages. Despite a short-lived viral social media campaign under the hashtag #BringBackOurGirls, very little action was taken to follow up on the plea to bring the girls back. Instead, Boko Haram has carried out numerous massacres, killing over 6,600 people last year. That's more than Daesh, known in English as ISIS, killed in Syria during the same time period. But little world attention has been given to the escalating situation in Nigeria, and social justice activists in the country are calling for people around the world to stand up and demand an end to the violence and kidnappings by Boko Haram in Nigeria.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Rosalind Scott, Don Zer, Ken Jones, and Callie Mikael. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Special thanks to Robin Ryan. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Ken Jones.
And I'm Callie Mikhail. Coming up on Tuesday morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, hear the Joe and Abe Talk radio show. At 9, on Alternative Radio, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, author of An Indigenous People's History of the United States, speaks on the other side of Thanksgiving. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 11, on Stage and Studio, host Demay Roberts presents Coming Home, Return of the Aleutic Masks, a documentary that takes us to Kodiak, Alaska, where Aleutic peoples work to save their language, cultural traditions, and heritage by unlocking the secrets of the masks collected in the 1800s. And at 11:30, Andre Middleton hosts Art Focus. His guests are Ezra Erickson and Tracy Harrison of the local record label Zamzan Sounds. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. It is a great time to become a member or increase your current membership. We currently have a matching grant for new and increasing members. Just go to kboo.fm/give to be part of this match. Thank you. Good night, Ken.
Good night, Callie. Good night, Danielle.
To make it look good. Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of BikeRaft, Saturday and Sunday, December 12th and 13th, at Bike Farm in Portland. BikeRaft features handmade gifts that support bike culture as well as food, drink, and music. Again, that's BikeRaft, Saturday and Sunday, December 12th and 13th, from 11 to 6 both days at Bike Farm, 1810 Northeast 1st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at cable.fm. on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events. Cabo Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hats for the Homeless donation drive. From December 1st through the 15th, 5 Southeast locations will collect clean, new, or gently used hats, scarves, and gloves, and the folks at Zippity News will distribute them to local shelters. Dropbox locations and more information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Labor Radio, followed by Prison Pipeline at 6:30, followed by Hard Knock Radio at 7, so stay tuned. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from BPP Insurance, working to assist individuals throughout Oregon with open enrollment process through healthcare.gov. Information on how PBP Insurance can help is available at 503-223-3638 or enroll